Welcome to the Gustavo Franco podcast. Today, we're joined by Gui Azevedo, a Brazilian entrepreneur who started a revolutionary company called Alice. Alice works as a pay-vider model in that it is both the payer and the provider. It basically integrates health insurance and care all under the same roof. I've always been fascinated by this idea, thinking that it's the best way to provide quality and cost-efficient care. So I was really interested to see exactly how Alice was built and how it works. I learned a ton about health insurance and disrupting the market, and my favorite part of our discussion was probably learning about the digital model that they developed. It makes accessing care so easy and personalized that it just got me wishing the whole time that I could be a part of their health system. And as always, I love talking about preventative care and improving population health. So stay tuned because Gui and I have a really cool discussion on how they encourage healthy living to all of their beneficiaries. You are now listening to the Gustavo Franco podcast, where we challenge the norms and uncover the truths of our healthcare system. I'm your host, Gustavo Franco. Hey, Gui, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining me from across the world. I'm in Australia right now, so I know the time zone difference was a little tricky, but I'm glad we got together to have this conversation.
Likewise. Thanks a lot, Gustavo. It's a pleasure to be here. Even though very distant, I'm very happy to know that you're based out of Australia.
Yeah, I've always been super interested in health insurance, and I think that it's definitely a way that we can improve healthcare overall, like in the world, but also in the US right now. I've been studying health insurance for a minute now, and the concept of vertical integration has always been super interesting to me. And I like that Alice is basically doing that, but from the ground up. So I'm very excited to learn from the company. I know it was just the 5th year anniversary. So congrats on that. How was that?
Thank you. Well, it's just in the very early days of the journey, but so far, so good.
Yeah. All right. So just to give like a brief introduction of Alice, like if you had to give an elevator pitch, like a 1 minute pitch of what Alice is, can you just go ahead and tell me what that is?
Sure. So we are a payvider. So we combine the functions of health insurance, a proprietary primary care, a whole technology stack that integrates throughout the continuum of care, including the secondary and tertiary care.
Okay, cool. So the secondary and tertiary care integration, that's not done directly through you guys. So you guys don't employ those doctors, is that right?
Correct. So we do own and operate the primary care. So we have employees there. We have over 100 nurses and doctors. We work with contracted doctors as well, but as of now, mostly employees, because we decided to build it from scratch. And and building a proprietary operation is easier to put together the whole processes and technology around it. On the secondary care, we decided to build a network. So it is a network, but the way we chose to build it and how we integrated technology through it, it's very specific. And that goes as well for the tertiary care. Although we don't own the hospitals, we do have an integration, meaning we have both tech integration and the doctors. So Alice's secondary care doctors are the one performing the surgeries in the hospital facilities. So in a way, it's our own team operating in the tertiary care.
So secondary care and tertiary care are integrated in the same way?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, cool. Cool. Just to like give a broad background of the health insurance market in Brazil, because most of my audience is in the US, Canada, and Europe. So could you just explain how the health insurance market works there? Is it mostly like employer-based, or are there also like a bunch of individual plans? And what's like the public insurance like?
Sure. So the population of Brazil is 210 million people, roughly. 75% of them are covered. everyone is covered by the public system, but 75% use the public system. It's a universal system that has been inspired by NHS. The remaining 25% of the populations are the ones who can afford to buy private health insurance. Out of those 25%, 80% is commercial insurance, and 20% it's what you call like affinity insurance and individual insurance. So unfortunately, although the public systems project, it's a very beautiful one, and it's beautifully designed, it is very hard to operate such a big health public system for more than 150 million people. So there's some miles of excellence, but usually people complain of some bottlenecks for accessing the system. Therefore, most of the population would like to buy private health insurance. It's just a question of price point and affordability.
When it comes to quality of care, is it pretty similar between public and private as well, or is there a big difference?
No, they're different. They're different. So structurally, there's one big difference between the two of those, which is the public system. It is a system in the sense that you have to start at the primary care to be referred to the secondary care and then to be referred to the tertiary care, unless you get an accident and your point of entrance is going to be the ER. Whereas in the private sector, there is no primary care, and that's very hard to believe. But so people who are covered, they decide to go wherever they want, and that's usually a specialist. So people jump directly to the secondary care. Suppose you have a headache, you might choose to go to a neurologist, and believe it or not, that happens a lot. So
that's very different from the US, huh?
Yes.
In that way.
Yes, it is very different. It is very different. And yeah, that's part of the story that I'm going to tell you later on why we're doing this. But the quality, when you consider, some of the best hospitals, some of the best universities in medicine are public. I wouldn't even say some. The best ones are public. So we do have a very, very well-trained and capable team of physicians and healthcare professionals in general. But the question is bottlenecks. That's the thing with the public sector.
Mm-hmm. And so are most health insurance policies there HMOs or open access?
Open access. So that's another interesting aspect. So structurally, when you think of products in the US, usually you do have the deductibles, the co-pays,
yeah,
and the ACOs or PPOs. Most of the private insurance in Brazil is based on reimbursements and with open networks. Let's say kind of a PPO with no deductibles. There's no non-deductibles in Brazil. There's some copay. So nowadays, 70% of the new plans are sold with copay, but that's kind of new. The base of the contracts, the majority is without copay. So the structure is a product that you don't have any financial incentive. You just can use it and you get reimbursed for what you use on an open network the way you want. And that is a very dangerous system in terms of cost effectiveness and the amount of waste that you can generate.
And is that because the patients can just go to as many doctors as they want and they don't really have to pay extra because it's mostly just the premiums that they're paying?
Correct. And also, yes, so they're not incentivized if someone asks for a second MRI because they couldn't find the first one. It's not going to hurt in the patient's pocket. So more MRIs get done because of that, as a simple example.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then when it comes to the private health insurance market itself, are there some big health insurance plans that just take over the whole market, like in the US? And are they usually operating in the same way as each other, or do any of them have vertical integration already?
So the total premiums in the private sector amount to $60 billion USD. So 60 billion USD for those 52 million people that can buy health insurance, or most of their companies buy for them. Out of those premiums, more than 50% are attributed to like six or seven companies. So yes, there is a big concentration. Although there are more than 500 health insurance companies in the country, there is such a concentration. There are basically two models working in Brazil. The first one and the most spread one is the one that I described, where people get reimbursed and there are no real verticalizations or closed networks. And there's another model which we call verticalized companies. And those companies, they have the whole stack. So they own the health insurance and they own the provider stack, meaning mostly hospitals and secondary care clinics. So that is a bit different compared to the US, what verticalization means. So because there's no like primary care and there's no real there's no integrated health system the way there is in the US. So verticalized company, they relied mostly, what verticalized means is owning hospitals and some high complexity like exams clinics without any... Yeah.
And then, so I guess that's where Alice fits in, right? With the focus on the primary care.
Correct. Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, cool. So let's just jump into the history of the company.
Right.
Because I think that's going to clear up how everything works and how it's different from other companies out there. First, I just want to start with the vision that you had at the beginning. Like, what was the vision right at the beginning before actually starting the company, and why did you want to go about doing it?
Sure. So a bit on the story before Alice. So 12 years ago, I was a co-founder of another health insurance company called Dr. Consulta, which is a network of secondary care for the uninsured population. So I described it the way the system works in Brazil, the public system. So people have difficulty accessing, after they go to the public primary care, it takes time for them sometimes to access specialists or exams. And by time, I mean several months. So we built this network of low-cost, out-of-pocket secondary care clinics where people could pay for consultations with specialists and exams. That's how I got into healthcare. We scaled that company to more than 30 clinics, more than 2 million patients in the greater metropolitan region of São Paulo, which is comprised of more than 20 million inhabitants. Throughout the process of building that company, we've raised a ton of capital from the US. So it was a VC-backed company. And in one of the, I don't know, maybe 20 trips I did to the US, circa 2016, I got connected to Kaiser in California. And they have this division, it's named Kaiser International. And so we had a few meetings with them. And I got very interested in the way to work it. And that's the first time I got to know a system the way Kaiser is designed, which is, so to say, a verticalized payer provider with a central role of the primary care playing out. And that struck me, because that's when I understood the role of the primary care, the true role of the primary care. And so that was 2016. So a few years later, around 2018, I left the day-to-day of the company and I decided to take some time off, go to California, did a program at Stanford, and got to meet Kaiser again. And at that moment, I wanted to start from scratch what we believe is going to be the new health system, private health system in Brazil. So the vision was and still is, how can we build out of scratch a health system that digitally integrates the whole continuum of care, that builds a trustworthy relationship with patients? And that's a very, very important topic, because people have to trust you for them to allow you to navigate them throughout the care system. And a system that uses the less amount of bricks possible, but it's not about not building bricks. It's just the less amount possible. But how can we play out a very deep and strong technology stack to play the role of the verticalization, but with digital integration?
So there's a big emphasis on digital integration through the app for all the patients.
Yes, I wouldn't even say the app. The app is one of the, let's say, one of the systems or one of the applications we built. But to give you a sense on the broadness of the application, so we've built the EHR. There's no such thing as Epic and Cerner in Brazil. So we decided to build our own EHR. And that EHR integrates primary, secondary, and tertiary care. We build the claims system. So the whole process of claims go throughout a proprietary system that is integrated with the EHR. And we build what I like to call a routing system that it's based on clinical and financial data that routes the patient through the most cost-effective care providers according to the health demand or the condition she or he have. And the app and all the faces of the app that is used by the members. And of course, all the UX used by all caregivers throughout the system. They use different UX. So that's...
Is that somewhat similar to like coding here in the US? You know, like when a physician does a specific procedure on a patient, he puts the code in for the health insurance for that specific procedure, and then they pay for that procedure that they did?
So no, it's different because it's the only thing that matters. Let's put it differently. Coding, the way I see coding in the US, so you turn your health professional into a revenue person, like a revenue task person.
Right.
So no, because our revenue is basically premiums we collect from the companies. And the only thing that matters inside the systems, it's really what are the coding necessary for the pathway to happen, for the right path for each condition take place. So maybe in the end it's somehow similar, but I'm pretty sure it's the burden is lesser in our case.
Yeah, right. So in terms of that, do you guys usually charge per condition? Like I'm going to have a headache visit, I'm going to charge for a headache visit, or am I going to charge for all of the, say, procedures that the doctor does while in the office?
So we don't really, so we pay for that, but we don't charge for that in the sense that a company pays a per member per month premium. And if the contract has a copay, yes, we have to calculate the copay in the events where that copay is generated. So that copay is going to be billed for the company or for the member, depends on the contract. But if the contract has no copay, and that happens a lot, there's no charging anything. So then what's important is how we are going to pay the provider. So if the patient goes to books an appointment with an orthopedist and his contract has no copay, she's not going to pay anything, but we have to pay the orthopedist for that visit. However, our system allows us to know that that visit is related to a knee pain, and that knee pain was identified as a certain ICD, and then we can track the patient ID and the ICD and what happened throughout the whole continuum of care. So what happened to that case and what costs was attributed to that case in the primary, secondary, and then tertiary care. And that's how we can measure cost effectiveness by, for example, each orthopedist that handles each case. And we're going to pay the orthopedists, we're going to pay the hospitals based out of the type of contracts we have with them.
So you can have different contracts. So you can have one with a physician that bills based on a specific condition and one that bills based on like the exact procedures that he does.
Exactly.
Okay, interesting. I do want to go back to like the history of the company.
Sure.
We got a little distracted from that. I was just interested in a bunch of the stuff that you brought up.
Sure.
But I think a good way to go about it is going to be to break down exactly what happened year by year. I know you just celebrated the fifth anniversary, right? So if you had to say like year one, what was the main focus? Like what did you guys accomplish there? And then just go on until like year five to get a good story of the company.
Sure. Great. So we started the company in 2019, March 19. And by then, I got together with, so we had three co-founders, and I got together with Andre and Mateus. So they were part of the C-level team that built and then eventually sold 99, which is the most successful ride-hailing company in LATAM, that it was eventually sold to Didi, the Chinese company. And they had a major role in that journey. So after the company, it was, I don't like that word nowadays, but it was known as Brazil's first unicorn, what they built. So after they sold the company to Didi, we teamed up. They had different reasons for wanting to build a healthcare company the same way as I did. However, I had maybe a more profound and deeper understanding of the system. And we teamed up and we started out of a WeWork little cubicle in March 19, the three of us. And it took us up to early 2020 to put together the first, let's say, the health insurance license. And by that, it's not just a protocol. We had to enroll at least, for you to have a license, you have to have at least one hospital in your network. At least, like, you have to have a certain amount of providers and a coverage in your network, though a very small one. So we worked to have that done. We were like maybe 15 people by then, 20 maybe. And we got the first license from the National Health Agency, which we would call ANS.
Wait, so did you guys have to acquire a hospital before that?
No.
Or like a little health system to get the license?
No, we had to have a contract with a hospital. So okay, when you apply the license, you have together with the license, you have to apply, you have to attach your contracts. So we built contracts with providers that they had to wait for the license issuance for us to start commercializing it. But the contract was signed with LAC. So that was early 2020, and we decided to start selling. So it was an individual plan. Although today we are commercial health insurance. By then, we started with individual health insurance. For several reasons, it was a good entry point, less competition, very local market. We decided it was the best way to start. So we decided to start selling in March, and then guess what happened in March 20? So I remember the day we were going to launch have a kind of a little party of the company on a Friday to have it launch on Monday. And we had to cancel the party on Thursday because the world was shutting down. That was mid-March 20. And think about it. We're just launching a health insurance company. And then you start thinking, what if all people we enroll are going to be like hospitalized? We don't know. We don't know what was going to happen. It was March. So let's not launch it. Let's stop. Let's figure out what is going to happen. So what we did in 2000, so that's March 20. In the next three months, we did kind of a friends and family project for, we invited 100 people to use just a primary care. So it was just some way we sorted out to get the product running, mostly the primary care part of it, and figure out if it works. Then by July, we knew the world was not going to end. Everyone had a better grip on what was going on. And then we decided to launch the product. So that's until the end of 20.
And this is all
20.
This is all focused in São Paulo, right?
Correct. Just São Paulo. So from July to December, we were fighting to get to 1,000 members. I remember it took us like 3 months to get to 100. It's so hard. So hard. Today we have almost 30,000. But by then, it was so hard to get to like the first 100. So we ended 2020 with the product launched and more or less 1,000 members and everything being tested. So in 21, and by then we had done our seed and series A. In 21, we did our series B in January and our series C in December. So it was basically a year of high growth for the company. We got to almost 10,000 members in that year, and it was just all about growing.
Was this still individual plans?
It was. With a broader network, so we kept increasing the network just to get a sense That moment we had one hospital. Nowadays we have the network 1,100 hospitals, all states, most of the relevant cities in the country covered. So a lot has happened. But by then we're fighting that. Think about it, Gustavo. We're a new health insurance, like with not relevant member base. People never heard of the company. We were not executives of that industry, like of the insurance industries before. So it was hard to get like a relevant hospital to like sign a contract with us. Even all the other networks, LabWorks, and even like the doctors. So it took we have to put a brutal force to get that rolling and get momentum. But then we started scaling the network and growing the primary care and iterating and evolving the primary care. We started with V1, now we are at V4. And by V, it is different. Each V was different from the previous one. So then to 2022, the world, well, you know what happened, war in Ukraine and interest rates up. We scaled back the high growth and we started focusing on almost exclusively on unit economics and our operating process. So to like shorten the story, 2022 was basically working on efficiency. 2023, we started selling B2B and we even harder worked on efficiency. So I would say that we are a completely different company in the go-to-market, in any go-to-market aspect and in any gross margin and operations perspective than we were a year and a half, almost 2 years ago, completely different. So we've been working on that. So right now we are almost 30,000 members. We have contribution margins almost 30%. We had negative in the beginning. A lot has evolved. And we decided to stop selling. So 7 months ago, late 2023, we decided to stop selling the individual insurance and focus on commercial insurance. For several reasons, it's very hard to have two go-to-markets at this stage of the company. And 80% of the market is in commercial insurance. And we decided to do one thing very well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is interesting. I mean, there were a lot of like challenges along the way that I do want to talk about too. But so quickly, just to clarify, were you guys since the beginning focused on your own network of primary care?
Yes.
Like, did you guys employ all your physicians and nurses right at the beginning?
Correct. Yes.
Okay.
So we have never changed the vision of owning and operating a primary care. It's just the way is what maybe primary care means in terms of how we operate and what is comprised. Maybe we're not like roots primary care anymore. We do our way of what we call health teams of Alice that is mostly primary care, but it goes a bit beyond that.
Mm-hmm. And would you say that the primary care that you guys have modeled is similar to what primary care in the US looks like?
Not really. So we started with a vision of building a primary care kind of like One Medical with a setup of with a retail footprints, clinics. We do have a few clinics, but the role of the digital care and the role of building the protocols and building the care teams digitally, where you can even have a specialist in the digital care team that is kind of managed by a primary care nurse, but the primary care nurse is going to drive a case throughout the whole continuum of care. So primary care in Alice drives the journey throughout the whole continuum of care. It tries to solve the problem. It tries to, 80% of the cases mostly are held by primary care. But when they had the 20% that have to go in the funnel to the secondary tertiary care, the role of the nurses are navigators, so to say.
You know, and that was something that I really appreciated when you showed me the app, like when you ran me through all the functions of the app. I thought it was really interesting when you had like the chat. You just start a chat about like a condition that you're feeling. And first you start talking to the nurse and then she can just like direct you to a physician. And in that same chat, you talk to the physician. And if you need to talk to a specialist, like you can talk to the specialist on that same chat, which I mean, I think makes things a lot easier, especially for the young population, right?
Correct. Totally. So we we have about 35% less ER usage than the same sample, age sample of other health insurances in the same region. This is like one KPI, but we have several ones.
And would you say that's attributed to the digitalized version of it or mainly focused on the primary care part of it?
No, I would say that it's because of the digital care part of it. We,
instead of going to the ER, they can just go on the app.
Yes.
Right?
When we built our primary care, so when you go, you saw the app, there is this little heart, which is the icon, which is the point of entrance in the DC system when you start talking to a nurse. It must be chosen by the patient. So the patient, we don't want to enforce anything. The patient, if she wants to go to a specialist or to an EHR or to an ER, she will go. She have that option. But we built a product. It's all about the product. We built a product that has a 30 seconds response time for your first question. So in 30 seconds, you get an answer from a real person, a real nurse that is looking at your EHR and calls you by your name. And you don't have to tell all the story over again because she knows who you are, what surgeries you've been through, what medications are you taking. She has the contacts. So that is a very friendly and likable journey. So that's the whole spirit behind. So people have to want to use it. And that's what makes it so different. So get a sense, we have almost 50% monthly active users in our digital care. I've searched all around. I never seen such a high MAU number. And those are not new cases. This is not like new claims. This is just people engaging with us. And most of the cases are very low complexity. People are just talking about the medication, some clarification on some doubt. They see the channel as a pal. You know, like they think, Alice, like, we have your back. And that's so unique about what we've built. On top of everything that is describing the health system is what is the trust we build with the patients.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many things that I love about that. I mean, first of all, just the cost effectiveness of it all, right? You're preventing patients from actually needing that in-person care and going to the hospital, which I imagine is a lot more costly than just providing the digital care. But then second of all, just like the accessibility of it, it's so much easier if you can just go on your phone and like get in touch with anyone real time rather than having to go all the way to the hospital, waiting for a physician, maybe to just talk about like a little cold that you're having, right? That you didn't really need to go to the hospital for.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
And it's very efficient because the system provides all the context. Consultation times are shortened and they have high quality. People love it, but they're just shorter. There's less to be talked. There's less to be said. Context is there for any doctor who gets the case or any nurse who gets the case.
Yeah. I want to go back a little bit to the history of the company. I know that we're like at a very interesting point of the company now, but you did mention there were a lot of challenges along the way, especially like right at the beginning, being able to get those first 100 members and then to those first 1,000 members.
Yeah.
What were the bigger like challenges involved around there? And how did you actually go about getting all those patients at the beginning?
There's so many, but one that is very memorable. We had a goal that was the 300, and our icon was remember the movie 300? So we had to get to 300 members. And the hurdle by then was because the network of the product was so narrow and so limited in its first version, we didn't have a good sales channel to contract with. For example, brokers didn't care about our product because they told, oh, your product sucks in terms of network. I don't care about the app. You know, early days, like, they don't know what app is. They still don't. I mean, the whole industry uses apps to get reimbursements and to see network. Nothing that I've described to you is, it's just Alicia has that. So the way people saw the product by then, brokers, it's just, oh, what network would you have? Oh, that sucks. So I'm not going to sell it. So in the early days, we sold the product ourselves. So we built an acquisitions team, a growth team that did inside sales. And that's very unheard of, at least in Brazil. So insurance companies sell through brokers, period. So a lot of people, myself included, we started selling. I did 150 selling calls, and so did several other people in the company. It was a battle. It was war in that sense. And we learned so much out of it. And we got to the 300 and we got to the 1,000 and well. And eventually, when it got to the size of the net, when it got to a decent product in terms of coverage, then brokers start selling us. But we still have that inside sales team, which is very strong and it helps balance our CAC. But anyway, that was, it took about 6 months of that little war where we were selling the products ourselves together with what's starting to become the inside sales team.
So how would you guys even go about like presenting the product right at the beginning to be able to make that sale?
So we did our speed. So we had a deck, but we mirrored the app, and that makes a lot of difference. So we did a lot of AdWords. So we used, like, you can imagine, like an acquisitions funnel, normal acquisitions funnel. Then we used like HubSpot to manage the leads, and then we got the phone calls. And then we got after a phone call, we booked a demo. And in the demo, we showed the characteristics of the product and how the app works. The whole thing, together with being an individual insurance, we were able to sell, because there's an interesting, so a point that I told you that we had an entry angle to getting to that was the individual health insurance. It is a very scarce product. Very few companies sell it, because from a legislation perspective, it's a tougher product to manage. So just a few companies sell it. So because it was an individual insurance, and because we had a different approach to the product, when you think about tech, we are able to be a different thing. And so people who lived in the neighborhood where our network was placed, it made sense for them to buy.
Let me just think about that for 1 sec. So right at the beginning, most of the people that were getting involved, that were like buying into the insurance, were people that lived around that network of hospitals. And then they were just amazed by how the app really functioned.
And the availability of an individual product with the network, with the few hospitals that those people wanted, because it's close to their home. Whereas the competition didn't provide the individual product with the same characteristics for them, or did provide with a higher price.
Right. So what are the benefits of like targeting the individual, and who usually are the people looking for individual plans? Like, why do they not have employer-based plans, and why are they really looking for the individual ones?
Sure. First is, I think it's important to give you a context on how legislation works. So there are three characteristics which are decisive for the individual plan, which are: the price readjustments are controlled by an index defined by the National Health Agency. So when comparing to the commercial insurance, contracts can be negotiated at any percentage of increased prices. In individual insurance, there's no such thing. The cap is defined by the National Health Agency, and it's always less than what commercial insurance practices. Second, you as an insurance company, you cannot deny a patient. If a patient applies and wants to buy, you have to sell. Third, you cannot break a contract if the patient is paying. You cannot. Two reasons for breaking a contract in individual coverages are delinquency or fraud. If none of those take place, the insurer cannot break the contract. So it is, from an economic standpoint, for the general health insurance companies, it is a tougher product to manage. And that's the reason most of the companies don't sell it anymore, unfortunately. We decided to start there.
Yeah. So then, I mean, just going back to who the population really looking for those individual plans were, like who were most of the people that were actually looking for those plans?
People who buy individual health insurance, so they are not employed, or they are employed, but their employer doesn't pay for their health insurance. Second, they don't own a company, even if it's a very small company where they do like some service work on their own and they do some invoicing. But so people that does they don't own a company. And yeah, those are the two characteristics. A company doesn't provide you, and you as an individual don't own your own company. So you have to hire the insurance on your own name, as if it were on your social security number, the equivalent of our social security number. Those are the people looking for, and they have the disposable income. Well, that's very important. They have the disposable income to buy it.
Right. Interesting. And that also allows them to be close to the network that they really pick. Because if you guys were targeting employers, right, then you could get a whole network of employees that were actually all throughout São Paulo and not specifically next to the network of hospitals that you guys had.
Correct. So, yes. So that's it. Reinforced our decision to start an individual plan because we had a very narrow network. Any little company with, let's say, 10 employees, there's a huge chance they're going to be spread throughout São Paulo, and we would have to have a network that would cover for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, just going back to that idea, I imagine there are like very high front up costs to being able to like first build this network and then get everyone to like come into the network. So was most of that done through VC funding?
Yes. So we basically, we financed the company up to now with VC funding.
Mm-hmm.
From C through Series C. And we have a very relevant G&A because we do have a health insurance that we have to manage. We have to comply with all the requirements and legislations of the National Health Agency. We do have a tech company in a way that builds. We have like 130 engineers, that we call a tech team, engineers, PMs and PDs that build a whole stack of technology. And we do have an entity that is the primary care entity that provides care, and we have to manage that operation. So when you stack all that, it is a big overhead. It is a big operation. And we financed all that with venture capital. So we raise up to now $175 million in four rounds.
Okay, interesting. And then at what point would you say that the company started generating enough revenue to put back into it and actually making a profit?
Oh,
on individual plans.
So,
and is that even happening now? Because I mean, it is early on.
Yeah. So no, it's very early on. So imagine we are kind of three and a half years in the game. So yeah. Our revenues are right now $60 million ARR. Although we have gross margins and it's increasing, it's not enough to cover for the G&A. So there's still a way to go. I would say 2 years.
Yeah.
For us to like really generate a profit. But that is the plan. I mean, it's a very complex business to put together, and to start generating a profit on that, it requires some time.
Right. No, that makes sense. And then just like going back to the aspect of growth that you mentioned with the company, like one thing that I find really interesting is being able to build trust with like all your beneficiaries. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's sometimes a big obstacle that you have to overcome at the beginning, right? Because how do the patients really know that this is a good plan? And how do they know that the physicians are good physicians too? So how did you really go about managing trust and being able to build trust within the beneficiaries to also be able to like expand the coverage later on?
So the foundation of trust starts with the culture of the company. It's very hard to put in, to describe you how the culture of Alice is like. How do we live by our values and virtues? But it is a very strong one and very peculiar. So everything that is outputted, all the output of the company in terms of products, in terms of human interactions, in terms of everything we do incorporate that very strong culture of caring for people and building trust. So the materializing that, the primary care, we saw and still see our primary care as the biggest pillar or the biggest engine for building trust with the patient. Because patient has to be taken care of very fast, meaning the access must be like 30 seconds, as I told you. Quality of the interactions, the quality of the texting, the quality of the voice and videos, and even the in-person interactions in our clinics, they live up to a standard. That's why we built it our own. So for you to get a sense, let's say that our NPS with the primary care, it's in the roofs. So above 80. The people, that putting into perspective, when people hire a health insurance in Brazil, they don't have a direct channel to talk to the health insurance about their health. They have a direct channel to get a reimbursement. And there's a lot of friction there, by the way. They have a channel to talk about the payments or to talk about whatever, the billing. But there's really not a channel to where that you chat and you have someone with the context and your EHR and all that, and that is ready to talk about your health immediately. That is building trust. That is really good. That's what we believe has helped us build a different trust towards the relationship with patients.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that also gets into an aspect of personalization and really getting the sense that the company cares for you, right? I mean, it's very different when you start talking to a provider and the provider like knows who you are, knows your history already, and can like really see why you're reaching out and what the best way to go about treating you is, rather than going to a completely like new provider that doesn't know your history and doesn't really know who you are.
Correct. And when you are interacting with the app, I mean, you can get your cases history. It's all there. I mean, when you click on the archive button, you see all the cases and you remember that you've been taking care for other cases and you want to revisit some sort of any prescription, a medication. What did I take when I had that flu last year? And you revisit that. And so you have a feeling that it's not even a feeling. You see that we have your back. I mean, we have your data. We have your health with us in the sense that we are here for you. That's different.
Yeah. And then going on to like secondary care and how the contracts really work, how do you guys balance being able to provide like the best care with also at the same time being cost effective, right? Because one aspect of vertical integration that's really appealing is that you can really manage your costs because they're directly linked to the insurance company, right? Since Sure. You have the payer and provider end of things, you can be a lot more like cost efficient. But how do you also ensure that you're providing the best care so that patients feel safe like in that plan?
So when you leave the primary care instance and you go to the secondary care, and I'll stretch a little bit and mention the tertiary care, you are under the care of an Alice doctor. And what
could you first just distinguish between secondary care and tertiary care there?
Okay. So tertiary care is basically when you go to the hospital to do a higher complexity procedure, usually a surgery. Okay. So tertiary care is in hospital, inpatient surgery, usually. Secondary care is consultation to specialists, low complexity exams, everything outpatient.
Cool. Yeah, makes sense.
So when you refer to a specialist or when you decide to visit a specialist, because you don't have to be for the primary care to do that, the network has been built by our own, meaning that we have built, so we have from the scratch, we brought 10 specialists who are like professors of big universities in each one in their specialty, of the most relevant specialties. That's like almost 4 years ago. And they helped us building the network with people they have formed, with people they know. And that's, so we started building the network with people we trust and with people that have the perfect moral and technical compass in terms of medical practice. And they helped us form like the first layer of the team. And by team, that's contracted doctors. But the way I'm telling you, it sounds as if we were building an employee-based team, but it's not. It's a contracted team. But we thought about it, and we built the processes. We built the hiring processes, all the interview phases, as if they were to be hired as employees, but they're not. And that has elevated the bar in terms of the quality and in terms of the characteristics, both technical and both cultural, of the first few hundred specialists in the network. It took us 3 years to build that. I have interviewed more than 200 physicians, specialists. My co-founders did that. I mean, it's another story. It could be another company story, how we built our specialist network. And for each round of financing that we raised with venture capital, we offered them to join the round. So we have a few hundred physicians who have put their own money to become shareholders of Alice, because we believe in that kind of interest alignment. In addition to that, they helped us from scratch build our own care lines and protocols. They did that together with our team. So when an orthopedist is following a care line for a knee treatment, he knows that the team he is involved with is the one responsible for building and putting together that care line. The system that all of them work with is our own EHR. So they have to, because after they complete the steps of an appointment, for example, after they end it, they get paid a few days later. So because they use our EHR, first, they have access to the patient's records, medical history, exams, blah, blah. But we, as a company, and our medical executives, our medical practice, is able to understand and analyze the practice of each specialty, and within each specialty, each ICD, and what each physician. So in the end, we've built an engine, and I cannot enhance how many technologies behind this. We built an engine that I like to call routing system, that is able to analyze cost effectiveness of each physician. We are able to give honest feedbacks on the ones who are not complying with the protocols. We are able to arrange the network in a way that it becomes more cost efficient. Cost effective.
So how does the system exactly work? Is it, there's a protocol that the team of doctors at Alice come up with, and then you can see if individual physicians are going out of that protocol and how much that's actually costing, and then you can kind of rate them based on that?
Exactly. Yes.
Okay.
So
interesting.
Exactly that. And
something else that you,
each group of physicians handle their own KPIs. I mean, if you get the orthopedists, they will meet once every month in Alice, some in person, some digital. There's a team in Alice that produces all the KPIs and gives visibility for the whole team of the KPIs, and they see how the team is doing in terms of adherence to protocols, in terms of every KPI that matters. So they know that the whole group is looking at their own efficiency, their own cost effectiveness.
Does that at all make physicians sometimes less likely to want to ask for an additional test if they think it's necessary, even though it might not be on the protocol?
I don't think so, because the protocols are made to serve for the Pareto or for whatever 70 or 80% of the cases. So there is going out of protocol. There's no 100% adherence to protocol. That is wrong. So it's always a bend. So you have to be within a floor and a ceiling of adherence of the protocol.
Yeah. Something else that I really like that you mentioned earlier is the idea of aligning the interests between the providers and also the company itself, right? By giving them a piece of the company, like ownership over the company. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I also talked about on my last podcast with Dr. Suede. He started his medical clinic in Alabama, and that's basically the same thing that he has been doing. All of the physicians that he contracts, he also gives them stock options and a piece of the company. And he also gives them their individual medical equipment. And what he was telling me is that by giving them ownership over something, over the company, first of all, your interests align, right? They want also to be cost effective for the company, but they also want to provide the best care because that's helping them and also helping the company flourish, right?
Yes.
I think there's a difference if you're just employed and getting a salary. Well, I just want to get paid, right? I just want to get my money. There's no really benefit for me going above and beyond because I'm just going to get paid either way. But if I succeed when the company succeeds, then I also want to help the company grow. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. I totally agree to that. And we see that happening. I mean, most of the doctors, they feel part, in a way, of the system. They don't feel they're just like contracted doctors providing consultations for a client, for a peer.
Yeah.
It's a different.
That's really interesting because I feel like a lot of companies miss out on that, but it's also something that I've seen on very successful like startups and companies. So
yeah,
it's really interesting to think about.
And in the end, when you compare how much health insurances pay their physicians, we do pay them very well, very well. And that is how, and they feel more valued. Then guess what? We build a trustworthy relationship, and trust comes at the place again here. And the trust must be established for that to work, for cost-effective medicine to be delivered, for less waste.
Yeah,
and for that less waste in the system.
Yeah, and I mean, especially in healthcare, building the trust is just so important because that their healths are at stake. But one point that you brought up earlier that I think we also have to emphasize is that the patients, they don't have to go through primary care, correct?
Correct.
They can go directly to the secondary provider. But in terms of like what you've seen, are patients more likely now to actually go through primary care and then be referred? Or do a lot of patients still choose to go directly to secondary care?
So a bit over 75% of the secondary care visits are referred by the primary care. So it is.
That's impressive.
Yes. It's very high. It's very high. We didn't want to build a gatekeeper, although it is a possibility, because when you build a gate, you don't have, as a company, the incentive to build the best product. When you give the patient the option to choose, and you have to build the best product for them to choose your primary care. And that's all our philosophy. I know it's harder. It would be way better to build a gate and say, oh, hey, you have to do this. But if we did that, we would be shooting our feet. We wouldn't have built the best product.
Right. And this just keeps bringing me back to the idea of like what's best for the patient and aligning those interests as well with the company, right? Because here we're able to, first of all, give them a very easy to access version of the product where we don't actually have to go all the way to a primary care physician to just say, oh, I have like a stuffy nose. But then in the same way, it's very easy to get that referral. Because I think that in the US, a lot of times it's just a burden to have to go all the way to, like, first of all, to schedule a primary care visit, right? Like, it can take a month to get a primary care visit. Then you have to wait to go to the secondary care. You can't just do it like through an app. So I think this just like makes the process a lot easier. And that's why the retention with primary care has been so high, in my opinion. I don't know. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Yes, I do believe that. Well, in the US, as far as I understand, in most health insurance, you cannot book a specialist before visiting your primary care doctor, right? Unless you pay out of pocket. And well, in our case, for sure, that's because think about it this way. If they don't have access to what they want, they will go to another product, because all the other products on the market offer direct access to the specialist.
Yeah.
So it cannot be a burden for them to use. It has to be better. They have to choose for it and say, oh, I prefer Alice. I prefer having the access to that primary care as opposed to the other company. And by the way, our prices are a bit lower because of our cost effectiveness. So they will pay a bit less for having that.
Mm-hmm. And then an aspect that you kind of touch on here is like what's best for the patient and what's best for you guys, right? And I always love thinking about like preventative care and really ensuring that the patient is healthiest and that aligns with the company. So in terms of just like preventative care, I know you mentioned earlier that you guys get 30% less visits to the ER, which I think in some, was it 30%?
Yes, almost 35.
Yeah. So to some extent, I think that that's a measure of Well, first of all, improved health outcomes, right? The population doesn't go to the ER as often, which is great. So just in terms of preventative care and ensuring like patient overall health, which I think that in the long run, right, like if they're healthier, they're going to cost the health insurance company a lot less because they're not going to have all of these health conditions that are super costly. So how do you guys go about providing preventative care? And are there like kind of, let's say, side missions that you guys have within the app to make sure that people are staying healthy?
Sure. So, yeah. So first of all, when you onboard the Lisi, there are two types of health information we collect from you. One is the one required by the National Health Agency, which is a health questionnaire. And the other one, it's based on that questionnaire. It's some additional questions that will help us classify you in, and it's sort of a Minnesota risk pyramid of health. So there are like four groups. If you fall into the top two groups, which are case management situation, or it's a disease situation. I mean, we had a wording in Portuguese for that, but people that have conditions that we require a closer relationship with a care team, they will be allocated a care team that has a different approach, a way more proactive approach. And for example, people with BMI higher than X, people with just several health markers that we will have a team located for them to help them do. They will go into a pathway. Some of the pathways are related to mental health, physical activity, and nutrition. So,
and when you say pathways, is that how the providers like communicate with the patient, or is it like directly in the app?
You get into a real program. So you have to lose weight. You get into a program to lose weight, where basically you have to see a nutritionist for a certain number of times, and you have to measure your BMI for a certain period. And as you are followed by a nurse, the nurse is going to text you if your activity has not been executed. So that kind of monitoring, we do that. If you are it's about 20% of our population that falls into that. For the 80% who we consider, let's say, healthy, we do have protocols. For example, I'm doing a colonoscopy tomorrow. I was asked by my primary care physician to do that, but because that's a protocol based on your age, there are other protocols for like healthy people that kick in based on certain criteria. In addition to that, we provide several groups of activities. So, for example, there's a running group at Alice. It's comprised of almost 1,000 members. So if you go in the app, there are several groups. There's yoga groups, there's running groups. We have a community manager that helps putting all that together. But in the end, when you enroll in the group, you fall into a huge WhatsApp group that has a community manager there. But it's about, so we sponsor some events, some health events. We, for example, in running, we have a coach running every Saturday and Sunday in a park. And so, but it's about the members themselves connecting to each other and building community. We just provide the inertia for that. But yes, and we also have in our app what we call Score Magenta. Magenta is our color. It's kind of a pink color. And we provide 5 KPIs and an overall score of your health based on information you input and based on information we have on your health. And that's everyone that has an Alice app has your health score. That's very interesting as well. For companies, for example, they have the aggregated score of mental health of the company. So some companies, some HR managers come to us and say, you know, I think we have a mental health problem. And we can come to the HR with facts, with measurements, with what percentage of your population has been diagnosed with anxiety or depression, and how does that compares to the rest of the population of their age. So that's a very interesting other aspect of Alice, which is how the companies can have access to de-identified data, but with population health measures and how their population are doing before the claims kick in. You know, that's interesting, before they have their claims. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, and for the patients themselves, I think it's really cool to have a tangible way to view your health and how, like, your health scores and different aspects really rank. At least for me, that has been, like, really helpful. I have a Whoop and an Apple Watch, and I love just, like, tracking a bunch of different things related to my health. And I've noticed that when I can see how well I'm sleeping, well, I actually want to sleep better. You know what I mean? Because I want that, like, sleep score to go up.
Yeah.
So I think it's really cool that you're able to, like, integrate that into the health insurance and into the app so that patients can see, like, how well they're doing, how they compare to the rest of the population amongst their age. And that really, like, encourages them to be healthier, I would say, which is very different from a lot of, I think, what other health companies do, especially in the US. I think that we focus a lot on treating the sick instead of preventing them from getting sick in the first place, which is what I really, really appreciate about the model that you guys are building, right? Because you're able to actually just keep the patients healthy, because since you have the payer and the provider in the same system, it actually benefits you to have a healthier patient. So you can really, like, just focus
and
on that.
You know what, Gustavo, I usually hear, we always had that health promotion. It's been always communicated in our messages, in our marketing. And I've heard some criticism on, well, if you invest in health promotion, there's going to be churn. And because of the churn, you're not going to collect the benefits of the people getting healthier.
What do you mean by that?
Because suppose a company hires Alice for the employees, and the employees churn. So people leave the companies, people are fired, the company hires new employees. So you don't have, as a health insurance, the guarantee that the person who's in a health promotion program is going to be there in the next year or so or two. So that is the main argument that I hear globally. Health companies, health insurance companies say why they don't invest in health promotion, because of the churn. And
oh, that's really interesting. I hadn't heard about that.
And we just don't buy that. We understand that. Of course we do. Who doesn't? But if you, it doesn't have to be that expensive. It just has to be smart. It just has to, like, there's several things that you can put on your app. The communities that I've told you, they're not that expensive to put together and to manage, to be honest. It's just having the direction and let's do this. And okay, it's going to add a little cost to the overhead or whatever. But we believe that's the right thing to do. And if we don't do that, that's not going to make the summer for the company. It doesn't make that difference in terms of the cost you add. So it's the right thing to do. We believe that. And you do engage people. In the end, you do engage people and you avoid hospitalizations. And you allow people to achieve lower BMIs without having to go to surgeries and so on and so forth.
Yeah, and going back to the idea of trust, I think it also helps build a trust and a good community around the company itself, right? Because, I mean, if everyone is, first of all, happier because they're living healthier because of all these programs that the health insurance company is putting together, well, that looks really good for the company. And then it's also building that community, which I think is important.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah. No, this is cool. This is cool. Just one last thing that I do want to talk about a little bit was COVID. I know we briefly mentioned COVID earlier on. How did it impact the overall, like, health insurance market in Brazil? And then I know you said that you guys had to, like, delay your start, but how did it impact, like, throughout COVID, mm-hmm. after you guys started, did you see that there was a lot more, like, higher costs because of COVID?
In the aftermath, yes, but harder to measure with our population because we had a quite small sample or cohort that onboarded a leasing during the early days of COVID. So most of our population are in the end or after COVID, the population that have been incorporated to our member base. But I can tell you, looking at the whole industry, when you look at the consolidated care costs measurements and frequency, during COVID, mostly during 21, let's say 20 and 21, care costs of the whole of all insurance companies went down almost 10 percentage points, a lot. And in the aftermath, they went up a lot. And so during 2023, during 2022 and 2023, the whole industry posted negative gross margins. Was a disaster. So frequency went to the roofs because a lot has not been done in terms of surgeries that had to be executed have not during COVID. And you know the story. So a lot of procedures have been accumulated. People who had diseases that haven't been followed and treated got worse. So I think now we're seeing it's becoming the frequency. It's going back. Not to normality, but it's going back. But I went to the U.S. in the beginning of this year at the J.P. Morgan Healthcare Conference in San Francisco, and I watched some keynotes of huge U.S. health systems suffering a lot as well with employee shortage and materials inflation and inflation in general, salaries inflation, materials inflation. So it's been very tough. For, I would say, almost everyone in the health industry, providers and payers. Well, right now, 2024 or late 2023 and early 2024, I believe we are seeing better trends in terms of frequency and cost. Do you see the same?
Yeah, no, I do. I do. Because, I mean, as you said, because of COVID, I think, well, first of all, there was all the costs directly because of COVID. But then, as you mentioned, COVID kind of delayed the treatment that a lot of people were going to get for other health conditions. So all of that got delayed to come after COVID, right? So the people that were actually going to get treatment for, say, like a bad knee that they had, well, they're actually getting that now after COVID. So you get that like piling up first because of COVID, and then after that because of all the conditions that didn't get treated during COVID.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, yeah,
totally.
Yeah, no, which I think is interesting. Uh-huh. Just going back really quick to the idea of like individual and employer plans. So how are you guys going about getting more companies involved? Because I know when we talked earlier, you mentioned that you guys are now like in the growth phase of the company.
Yeah.
So what's that like looking like now?
Right. Yeah. So we are in this, I'll say in the last 2 months of last year and this beginning of this year up to March, we are seeing the highest velocity of new members we've seen in the whole history of the company. And that has been driven by a few factors. First, because we focused on commercial insurance. So it's just one go-to-market strategy. It's one type of message, one channel. And we have evolved a lot with the brokers and also our inside sales channels. But what is happening is that companies that are using are becoming satisfied, and the HRs talk to other HRs, and it's just density. I think we are in an industry where we fight a few brands that have been there for a century. I'm not joking. So it's the only new incumbent that is playing that corporations and companies game. So people choose us because other experiences are good. Of course, we do have a good branding. Of course, we communicate a lot. Of course, we are very well capitalized. Our service is great, but companies have to use us, and then everyone becomes satisfied. The price increase is lower than the average of the industry. That has been true last year, and it's going to be true this year again. And so they pay less. the quality is higher, and that just compounds. So it's compounding, and it's not a J-curve stick. No, that doesn't exist in healthcare. And if it does, oh boy, you have a problem. So what matters in our industry and with the business we are building, it's constant progress. It's doing solid and constant progress in terms of growth, in terms of quality, in terms of margin. There's no such thing as doubling, tripling every year. This is not software. Although there's a ton of technology here, it's our moat. So the whole tech stack, the whole digital integration we've built, I'm pretty sure that's the moat. But that doesn't mean that you have to go so aggressively that we are also in the risk underwriting business. So you have to underwrite risk very, very cautiously.
Yeah. Since it is so innovative, are there like aspects of Alici that some companies that choose not to go with Alici are still like reluctant about?
I would say that yes. I mean, it's not that I would say, for sure, yes. And there are a few. We have some good hurdles to overcome yet. So the first is, because we are so new, people that have quoted us, let's say 2 years ago, saw a network that was so thinner compared to the one we have today. And that's what they have in their minds. So next year or the other year when they are going to the market to get quotes on the health insurance plans, they're going to remember, oh, no, I don't like Alici's network because it's thin. But you know, the velocity, the velocity that we operate is huge. So I have a completely different network from the one we had 10 months ago. And so we have to keep updating the companies and the market in general. Say, okay, what are the new features of Alici? What have we increased? What have we upgraded? What have we launched? And so that's one challenge. It's kind of a comms challenge, and the way we communicate through when we sell. But the other challenge is we don't have that big brand yet. We are quite well known in São Paulo, but we are not a 100-year-old brand. So that's let's put it this way: if you are a traditional company, meaning a client, a multinational company operating out of the US with a branch in Brazil, your HR manager is going to be like very cautious with hiring like a new company as opposed to the ones that have been there for his whole life. So we have to overcome that as well. So that's why we're not playing in that market. We're not playing the multinationals, big companies, blah, 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 blah. We don't like that. The biggest and the most interesting market is like small companies.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. Are you guys usually looking for companies that are based off of São Paulo, or are they usually just like all throughout Brazil?
Based out of São Paulo with up to 30% of the employees spread out throughout Brazil. Ideally, and at least 70% based in São Paulo. That's what we like.
Yeah. And have you guys been able to like expand access so that it's pretty accessible even in other states?
Not, I mean, we don't sell the contracts in other states. Think like this. If the company is based out of São Paulo, it's going to be a contract with prices of São Paulo. If we were to sell a contract to a company based in Rio, then we have to play Rio's market prices. And it's a different competition. It's a different game. It's a different game.
So, but then if a company based off of São Paulo has like virtual employees that are working in, say, Rio, how is like the access there? Is it still pretty easy?
Oh, yeah. So everyone has access to the digital primary care. And in addition to that, we have a pretty dense network of providers. So I believe in Rio, for example, we have probably 15 hospitals in the city covered. In addition to that, like several dozen labs and hundreds of doctors. So we do have like real coverage in most relevant cities in the country.
Mm-hmm. Cool. No, this is really cool. I want to end off in a positive note here. Like, where do you see Alice 20 years from now in Brazil?
20 years from now will be for sure the biggest health insurance company, private health insurance company in the country. And we will be luckily working with the public system. So I don't know how that's going to play out, but that is a dream that we have to, because we are developing that technology and that kind of operation with primary care, when you visit how the public system is designed, it has so much overlapping in terms of so much similarity, not overlapping, so much similarity. And we are building tech in this huge velocity. And we believe that in maybe 10 years, we might have something that would be able to help the public system in some way that, who knows, we could, going back a little bit, there is a health, each country has its health system. Of course, there is the public and the private, but they are interconnected in several aspects. So in the end, there is one health system. Public and the private, they play different roles in the country's health system. So we see Alice play a role in the country's health system. It goes beyond rebuilding the private health system. So that's our vision.
Do you think that that could look like a contract with the government, with the public system, in that they can like have access to the app, the digitalized version of things?
It could be, yes, one version of that. It could be a providing the our, let's say, our routing system that allows for the most cost-effective providers to be chosen, things like that. It has a lot to do with technology. I mean, I never spoke to anyone from the about that. It's just pure vision and speculation. But it's a dream. I mean, we talk about this. We've talked about that early days in the company. It's a vision like we have. If we are successful, we have to somehow to help in a way the public system becoming more cost effective, more efficient. It's not that they are not. They have so few resources to play with. They do a great job with the amount of resources it's allocated for that health system. But of course, with technology, a lot more can be done.
Yeah, and also make it a lot more accessible, because I know you said that was a big limitation of the public health system there.
Yeah,
no, that's really cool.
Yes, but we are not here to build another health insurance. We're building something really new, and it should be the biggest company in the industry when you look at a decade or two. And it's not about the size. It's not about the grandiosity. It's not about that. It's just about building a new system that fixes things that have to be fixed. As a consequence of fixing some parts of it, you build a moat. And because you build a moat, you have a better product with better prices, and you know the story.
Yeah, no, I love this. Do you think other like well-established companies are going to try to model based off of what you guys are doing as well, or no?
I don't know. Good question. There are some other ways to try to fix it or try to build a cost-effective system. We're trying one way that we believe. I believe there are other ways. I believe other companies might succeed, but let's see. We're still very, I mean, we have a very small member base. We're just getting started, but we are almost 500 people that are completely obsessed with building this the right way. It's a complete obsession. And I think that is very unique when you, that kind of compulsive obsession in winning and building it right and getting this right, I think that's part of the edge we have.
Yeah, no, I love this. It's like an amazing mission. I look forward to seeing where the company's going to go in the future. I hope to keep in touch with you to follow where you guys go to. Very excited. thanks a lot for this conversation. I learned a lot about the company, learned a lot about, honestly, like a topic that I've been thinking of a ton, how to be able to integrate everything together to actually fix the system. So really, really excited for this.
Thank you, Gustavo. And well, and thanks for promoting this kinds of discussions. I've listened to your most recent episode. I was very impressed with the way you're handling it with your guests. And I think you'll have a bright way ahead.
Thank you. It's really fun. So this was exciting. Thanks, Guy.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Gustavo Franco podcast. We hope our exploration of the world of healthcare has been insightful and thought-provoking for you. The opinions expressed here are ours and of our guests and should not be considered professional advice. This podcast is a collaborative learning experience for both the producers and listeners. While we strive to convey accurate and up-to-date information, we acknowledge that our research may have limitations. We encourage all of our listeners to supplement their knowledge by conducting their own research. If you enjoyed this episode and want to stay up to date on our future releases, make sure to subscribe or follow us on your preferred podcast platform and social media. We highly value your feedback, so please don't hesitate to reach out with your thoughts, questions, or suggestions for future topics. Together, we can foster a more educated America and contribute to a more effective healthcare future. Thank you for joining us on this healthcare exploration.